Hello, regulars. You're listening to Floor by Floor, a Tower of God podcast discussing the latest chapters of the webtoon. I'm Reziot.
And I'm Viralane.
And we're your hosts. Welcome to the 11th floor, where we'll be discussing chapter 576, or season 3, episode 159. There's a lot to unpack in this chapter, but first, a recap.
In the last chapter, we had a lot of action going on between Gustong and Tramurai. Gustong commands his blaze to slice and dice Tramurai's divine beasts, and everyone shields themselves from the flying debris. Gustong then steps on his cigarette, causing it to explode, and lights all of the viscera chunks on fire. Gustong and Tramurai exchange more insults. The chunks of flesh gather up and reform into a chimera. To this, Gustong summons an even bigger sword and cuts the chimera to pieces. Tramurai tells him it's pointless because they will keep coming back stronger. Gustong is not convinced, calls his divine beasts useless trash, and Tramurai threatens to pull out the arrogant punk. Gustong eggs him on as more fire explodes. Meanwhile, Goruo asks Kun why he's just standing there instead of running away. Kun interrupts the family heads bickering and asks them, isn't it inappropriate for them to fight in such a small space when they are family heads? He'll set a scene for them on the condition that Bomb's team is also allowed to join. The prize for the winner will be Bomb. The Pobedal family will choose the location and the game will be chess. The winning condition for Bomb's team will be that they arrive at the fight's location without being caught. If they win, neither family can touch Bomb. Based on his observation, he believes both sides will be satisfied with his offer and his side gets a chance to win Bomb's freedom. Both Tramurai and Gustong, surprisingly, agree. Gustong states the match will be a week later. If they don't arrive on time, they lose. Kun concludes the negotiations, but Tramurai cuts him off with some additional conditions. He wants Obaba to watch over them and inform him if they try to escape. Tramurai then tells Bomb that if he wants to leave his battleship, he should do it with his own power, without the help of Gustong or a rancor. Bomb accepts. As the submarine leaves, Umtiti comments that Goruo wants to escape through the battleship's central aquarium, which has strong enough Shinsu pressure that even rancors struggle to endure. Plus, there's the dangerous divine beast inside it. He believes Bomb will give up because he won't be able to get past the divine beast that is strong enough to have wiped out a family branch on its own. And the chapter ended there. This week we had a whole lot happen.
If you were excited about setup before, this is it. So let's start with the summary. Goruo gathers everyone in a briefing room to explain how they are going to escape. Obaba laments being included in the escape, as Bomb wonders if he's Elaine's father. He says they are heading towards the largest aquarium in the tower located inside the mothership. Tramurai raises many rare divine beasts inside it. One time, he built a domed city inside it and put a whole family branch in it. They got wiped out, though, and their city destroyed, because they upset Tramurai. Lilial tries to justify it, saying it's their fault for offending the family head in the first place. Goruo says Lilial doesn't understand because she's still young, but they were wiped out because they missed one meal for Tramurai's favorite divine beast. He asks her if that's a crime worth drowning a whole city for, and she doesn't respond. Kun thinks to himself that all the family heads are alike. Goruo goes on that they found a broken gate in the ruins of the underwater city, and they have fixed it in secret. The gate will break in a single use, but that's the gate they will use to escape. The submarine drops into the aquarium, and there's a plethora of colorful fish swimming around, both cute and scary. Kun is struggling, saying his body feels like it's going to get crushed. Obaba tells him that the deep levels of the aquarium have a Shinsu density matching the upper levels of the tower. The submarine is the only reason regulars can survive. Obaba then confirms that all the divine beasts in the aquarium are ones that are strong enough to live in the upper floors. Kun has concerns about being in danger, but Obaba tells him not to worry because the submarine looks just like another divine beast. Kun then notices some similar-looking crabs to the ones their team met at the nest. He wonders if the ocean they had mentioned was in fact the aquarium. He understands how he could have mixed them up because the Lopobia family head is like the ocean, who swallows everything up in the mothership and rules over it. A beep goes off, and Goruo wonders, based on its size, if Tramurai released the One. We cut to a bedroom deep within the submarine where Lilial and Shilial are tending to their mother, who is laying in bed. Bomb suddenly looks up after feeling a presence and notes something is coming. Outside the submarine, a massive multi-headed divine beast comes up behind them and tries to swallow them up. Its teeth grazes the ship and everyone stumbles. Chaw calls out that a divine beast is attacking the submarine, and Yuri says she expected that because they were never going to be let go that easily. Chaw is ready to go fight it, but Yuri tells him they can't because per the family head's rules, if they interfere, the game is over. Bomb rushes past them, saying he will head out there, but Chaw tells him it's too dangerous. Bomb tells him that if the divine beast is a challenge for the family head, then he can't run away from it, and he has to face it head on. Bomb climbs out of the submarine and pops out from a hatch on top. There's a shot of tiny Bomb facing the monstrous divine beast that is ready to eat them. I love that panel, by the way. It's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Like, teeny tiny Bomb, you can squish him, and then, oh. Big teeth, big mouth.
So many teeth, so many mouths. Gororo hears that Bomb stepped out of the submarine and is shocked. He points out that the divine beast is the one who wiped out the underwater city and destroyed a whole family branch. On top of that, the Shinsu pressure is too strong for a regular. Kun tells him not to worry about that last note because Bomb is not affected by Shinsu pressure. Internally, he goes on to say that perhaps the greater the Shinsu pressure is around him, the stronger it might make him. From outside the submarine, Bomb forms a Shinsu bow and arrow. He feels something because of someone else's memories, perhaps. But he understands that the divine beast was also trapped here by the family head and is just another one of his victims. With that in mind, Bomb decides to grant it freedom and shoots off a bunch of Shinsu arrows. The arrows envelop the divine beast and reappear outside the mothership. A plethora of divine beasts from inside the tank are now free. There's a shot of Lime running through the garden and she spots one of the divine beasts outside. She calls it Master Gyaro, and it's the beast she's been looking for. Meanwhile, Tiara and Matt are also admiring the flood of divine beasts above them, and Tiara calls it beautiful. So beautiful, she wants to destroy it. We get a shot of Kayab, who is still alive, but very wounded. We cut to Tramore saying that Bomb's answer to his proposal is freedom. He doesn't remember who, but he feels like he knows someone with thoughts like Bomb's. He desires Bomb, if for any reason, than to figure out who that person is. Gustong flicks a cigarette and tells Tramore that he'll meet him in a week at the match location. If he can even make it there, he taunts as he leaves. We cut back to Bomb looking out into the empty aquarium. He thinks to himself that perhaps the family heads are like the divine beasts that were in there, but trapped in the giant tower. If that's the case, then he must... His thought is cut off by a POV change to Kirin asking Tramore if they should recapture the escaping divine beasts. Tramore says there is no need. He may leave the fishbowl empty for a while because he is only looking to capture one. The submarine approaches the underwater city, and there are a lot of tombstones on the ground. Gororo says that they're at the gate and will be warping soon. As the submarine crosses the gate, Bomb hears the voices of the fallen spirits. Avenge us, they ask. As Bomb continues the thought on what he must do. Kill Tramore, the spirits ask. Gustong appears in front of Tiara, and she and Matt fall to their knees. Tiara asks for forgiveness for failing the mission, but Gustong says she did not. Things went according to plan thanks to the Son of Kun's quick wit. The Irregular and Tramore will be going to where they want them, and they must stop the Lopobia from capturing the Irregular. He tells them to inform the army that starting now, any members of the Lopobia military that come into their area are to be killed on sight. In 1 week, the divide will become the beginning of destruction. And that's how the chapter ends.
Now, this chapter didn't seem like much at first glance. The length was kind of normal, maybe a little bit longer than the previous one. And it didn't seem like a whole lot happened, but in fact, a lot did. At least on the theoretical side, and the culmination of a lot of plot points that have been dropped all throughout the comic. But let's start with some of the key events in this chapter, because it gave a lot of food for thought. Shinsu density and Bomb. As Obaba tells Kun, seeing as the aquarium's density is comparable to the upper levels of the tower, could we assume that Bomb's mostly immune to Shinsu attacks and pressure increases at this point? That's pretty insane if so. It was a nice callback, though, to see that Kun would know that Bomb isn't affected by high-density Shinsu from Lower Rose's first test back on the floor of tests. Everyone was kicked back by that Shinsu wall, All except Bom, who thought it was a mistake. And now it's also been shown that Kun Shinsu resistance is the weakest of the trio, as Rock was not affected by the crushing pressure present inside the aquarium.
He even went on multiple times to make note that he wasn't affected at all. It kind of pulls into question why. There have been some theories from the fans that maybe it has to do with him being an ancient one, but there aren't enough clues to draw a conclusion.
None yet, but it was surprising to see Kun kind of doubling over from the pressure, while it seemed like nobody else at all was affected. Even though in the last chapter, it seemed like Kun was able to stand up to all of the Shinsu pressure put off by the great family heads while everyone else was defending themselves just in case.
Adrenaline is one hell of a drug.
Maybe this is the after effect of that. Another thing I'd like to point out is Bom's mimicking of his ability, the bow and arrow, and teleporting out all of the divine beasts from the aquarium. Now, who knows if this is an art continuity thing or as a result of the increased Shinsu available to Bom inside the aquarium, but it seems as though Bom was able to mimic Kel-Halam's bow and arrow and So's teleportation ability at a far closer accuracy and higher power than what he exhibited at the first wall of the nest. Or maybe it's because he wasn't using the souls to mimic at this time and they appeared closer to their original form, but either way, that was awesome.
It was a real display of an ability that's not for combat, and I think that's such a Bom thing.
It's like everything about him and everything around him always points to some sort of violence, but he himself just does not exhibit any sort of violence at all. He twists things to be non-combative. He denies the violence, and it's just so true to his character and so intriguing.
Definitely.
And with his freeing the divine beasts, and going so far as to essentially destroying the aquarium, because, well, now it's empty to fish. Chomroy goes on to say that he wants to capture and keep Bom to find out who it is he's remembering, because his ideals of freedom remind him of someone that he doesn't remember. Now, Chomroy's mention of that person or potential persons was gender neutral, but a lot of the fandom has been grasping on V being who he is mentioning, but considering the current plot pointed to Sol-Hyeongwon, the tree where Evankel, Shibisu, Hots, and the rest are. I want to say it's more hinted at Arlene, but really, maybe it's both of them. It'd be nice to hear about both of them in one big lore drop, and we're just missing information on V. He's only ever been given by name. We know, well, what happened to him, supposedly, but that's all we ever got. We get more about Arlene. Everyone seems focused on Arlene, but what about V? And it seems that Chomroy was quite close to this person that Bom reminds him of. And it got me thinking. I've mentioned it before, but could it be that Jahad isn't only gaslighting Chomroy here, but all of the 10 great family leaders? It's a little weird that all of the other heads decided to back up Jahad over Arlene and V when they split up from the group. Surely the 10 great family leaders had preferences for them and may have wanted to join them. But perhaps something changed their minds or kept them from getting involved. Gustong says he remembers V as being the worst person ever, and yet Data Edon says otherwise. Chomroy straight up removed his memories of the two and hinted that he gave those memories to Leviathan, or most of them, as he keeps having recurring nightmares of people he never remembers when he wakes up. Jahad's likely warped the truth, and the contents of Rachel's book and Gustang's willingness to go forth with saving Bom to achieve whatever it is that he needs to find the truth seems to have answers we're missing to get a bigger picture of the 10 great family leaders' actual situations. And really, that trauma remembers something about freedom, even going as far as destroying everything around them to get it, despite having thrown away his memories? It's definitely got to do with them. Do you think he's referring to one or the other, or both? Could this be a red herring?
It does seem like there's little clues being thrown out there that this is someone that is associated with the 10 great families. So it's gotta be them, or at least be related to that group in some way or form. I think we are going to get a nice lore drop soon. But how soon exactly? The story is kind of piloting away from that. So I'm sure we'll do a loop as they reach this meeting. Or the meeting could just be them blowing everything up and nobody talks about anything.
Destruction sure seems to be a theme around here lately. Why speak when you can blow things up? Speaking of destruction, one of the big things brought up in this chapter is Bomb's purpose in a tower. It's been brought into question in this chapter, and some clarity may have been given as to what it actually is, and a wider viewpoint on Siu's story. It's been emphasized that his purpose is to simply slit Jahat's throat, but it seems to be more than that now. And it's something that's been building up throughout the entire story, that his purpose may be more about freedom than killing anyone or destroying things. Or, well, with this chapter, that perhaps destroying the tower is his purpose, to free its inhabitants. This is backed up by something in early season 2. In season 2, episode 114, Illumic Edrock, Repelista's guide, tells Evan that the tower only really opens its doors to irregulars out of necessity and provides 4 examples of situations where it does. For stability, for change, for revolution, and for liberty, or freedom. It could be said that Jahad represents stability, as he unified the tower under his power and pioneered the immortality contract signing among the 10 great family leaders, establishing their empire. The tower came into what could be currently considered its golden age as a result of that. Coming after that, change would be Phantominum itself, as after its invasion of Jahad's castle and the decimation of many of the Jahad family rankers, the ranking system and management of future irregulars in the tower was completely overhauled. Revolution could be attributed to Yurik himself, seeking a way out of the tower, rebelling against the current great family system and the empire itself, refusing to use his insane power to conquer, but to help people and to try and improve the situation in the tower. Unlike the 10 great family heads, despite all of his power, he seems to be very responsible with it and clings to his humanity as much as he can. And finally, freedom. Bomb, as an irregular as well, seems to be set on a path to liberate the tower from the Jahad Empire, but on a grander scale. And it's seeming more and more like he's going to liberate the entire tower from the tower itself. But how is he going to do it? Bomb is being set on the crossroads again, where he has to decide exactly how this freedom will be achieved. Through death? Through redemption? Or through other means?
Something related to how he's going to do it comes up often in the constant reminders throughout the story that Bomb should remain human. We see it with Kun constantly reminding him that he is a human and that he doesn't need to be a god. We saw it at the rice pot, where his goals were compared to Jahad's, but he was different because he didn't seek power to dominate it, but sought power to help. So that's something that I think we're going to be seeing a lot in the themes.
Bomb's compassion would generally lead us to believe that, yes, he will try his best to liberate through nonviolence. Seeing all those creatures trapped in the aquarium, he recognized them as traumatized victims and set them free without hurting them, even though, well, that Shinua just tried to eat them. He didn't try to attack it. He set it free. The anger wasn't pointed at them or anything, and, well, the fish is likely just trying to survive. How could he blame it? Interestingly, there was an episode way back on the Floor of Death where Gustong referred to Yurik as a being the size of a whale trapped in a fishbowl, explaining his erratic behavior, and went further to say he understood his behavior. Bomb's deduction that the 10 great family leaders seem to be like fish trapped in an aquarium seems to be spot on. You could say that the tower and the 10 great family heads are as they are, all because of cabin fever. They've been trapped in there far too long, and they've all gone crazy. I do hope that Bomb is the one that essentially brings them all back to life, or back to who they were, or at least reminds them of who they were, because they've been stagnating far too long and need to get out of here. And Bomb has tried liberating things before. In the past, Bomb has promised and tried to give people freedom, both failing and succeeding in many different ways. Bomb himself has become a promise of freedom to several people. In Dorsey, Anak, and Kun himself, who wishes to take over his family and abolish his father's rule. By hanging out with Bomb, it certainly seems like that could become a possibility. Heck, the Fonsecal branch of the Eurasia family have their eyes on him for a promising opportunity for change. Yuri has always been a rebel against her station despite also trying to stay within it out of necessity, and recognizes Bomb's potential as an irregular to destabilize the tower. And at the Namehunt station, which was portrayed as an analog of the tower itself, Bomb managed to liberate Elaine without having to kill the 10 bosses, and subsequently the station itself, though it's assumed that it's still running in the same state with another ruler over it having taken her place. Is that really liberation if it's just deposing the current system and then moving on from it, without fundamentally changing anything about it? And then we come to the fiasco regarding the K-9 people and Deng Deng, which could be considered a failure of his. Deng Deng, who he promised freedom to and ultimately was unable to, realizing he was both too weak and lacking the conviction enough to do so. And the K-9 people themselves, Wo's skill to protect was outside of his means. It made him want to grow stronger to truly achieve what he promises people he will do, to change their situations, liberate them from what causes them suffering. And despite that, Bomb continues. Recently, Bomb has gone forward with even promising he'd help Lilial and Shilial get out from under the suffocating influence of their family. All of this leads me to believe that we'll probably get a combination of these successes and failures with the 10 great family leaders as Bomb proceeds within the story. Some may be given freedom. Some may simply be saved. Some may be beyond saving and needing to be eliminated, whether metaphorically or literally. And perhaps slitting Jahat's throat, quote-unquote, may be more of a metaphorical purpose, where Bomb's goal ends up being more to undermine Jahat's authority, or, in some means, thrust him back down to Earth and reconnect him back to his humanity, while granting the tower its freedom from its current stagnating state. And going on with theories about Jahat, a lot of theories were brought up this week, some old, some new. One of the popular ones discussed this week is that he stopped climbing the tower not just because of the extremely hostile administrator on the 135th floor, but that he might be an unwilling prisoner of the tower itself for one reason or another we have yet to have any real revelations for. And who knows if that administrator even exists? Jahad's honesty is being put under a questionable lens as of late. As we were discussing earlier, seeing as Bomb's purpose seems to be clarifying into the concept of freedom, and his even going as far as to destroy for it, this could be what Rachel is going on about, what she fears about Bomb, and why she's actively trying to prevent his destruction of the tower. Bomb's on the road to obtain insane power and has been growing exponentially this season. It seems that, yes, the final boss of the tower is, well, the tower itself. And I have to say, a common theme in a lot of manhwa as of late is the appearance of towers and transcending them, breaking them, going beyond them, etc. A theory presented a long time ago regarding Tog, and that recurs a lot in the fandom over the years, is that the purpose of the tower itself is to create a god, and that the means for someone to achieve that is to destroy the tower. And the way this was to happen was divided into two possibilities. The first one hints at Jahad's current purpose in the tower. Maybe he attempted to literally become God and failed. And in his failure, realizing he is not the one and that the possibility for this God creation exists, open to anyone else, has him locking the rest of the tower away to prevent the current tower from collapsing. The second possibility is that he hasn't actually attempted to achieve this, but realized this truth. And in order to protect the tower from its own destruction, has become the guardian of the tower instead. Meaning Bomb is definitely villain-coded, as the text itself has pointed out before, and confirms Rachel's fears. Seems the only way to climb the tower is to blast open those gates, or maybe blast the top off the tower, or just blow up the tower itself. There's nothing to climb if there's no tower, right?
I still have a feeling that Rachel is looking for the glory herself. Whatever these fears are, is she's afraid that Bomb's going to mess it up. And like you said, whether it's blowing the top off or getting rid of Jahat, she wants to take the situation into her own hands. Because remember, Siyu has confirmed that Rachel is a protagonist. She's not an antagonist in the story. She's got to have a purpose in the story that's more than just stopping Bomb from achieving his goals.
She wants to be, perhaps, a savior of the tower, or the liberator of the tower. And, well, a savior and a liberator can be defined in multiple ways. As explored earlier, liberation could mean saving someone, saving something, And saving can be done through redeeming something, allowing it to live, or killing it.
I think it'd be pretty cool if in the end they both have to work together.
That would be fun to see. Also very, very complicated.
Indeed. I trust Siyu, though. He seems to choose the path of most friction.
But yes, Rachel could be wanting to take the position as the savior of the tower by saving it from Bomb destroying it. And Bomb could also be seen as the savior of the tower by destroying it and liberating everyone from it. It'll be insane if some sort of balance is struck there, where something happens that causes neither of these things to happen, or perhaps both.
We just gotta let Siyu cook, then.
Please. Well, in the end, this chapter was a can of worms in a dugong-shaped Trojan horse, and my goodness, things are going to get interesting. I guess we'll find out next time on Sunday Chapter Boogaloo. Where does Gustong want to lead Tramurai and Bomb? Is the warp gate another part of Gustong's plan? Why does the aquarium need to be left empty? Will all of the divine beasts Bomb freed from the aquarium go on to cause a catastrophe, a direct consequence of his actions that Bomb might not have thought completely through? How does Lihima Slime's guardian beast play into all this, if at all? But I gotta say, it has a really cool design. Kind of felt like it'd start role-playing the Deku Tree from Zelda at any second. Tell me it's like some sort of chosen warrior or something. It's the eyebrows.
Definitely.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, regulars. We'll see you on the next floor. Have a good one.
Goodbye.